Are you ready?
What's going on here?
Resistance is futile.
This,
indeed you are, Paul,
is...
It's in my hand, Paul!
Fan Effect.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Fan Effect, the Fan Effect podcast sponsored by Larry H. Miller Megaplex Theaters, the greatest place to and biggest and best movie theater experience in Utah. And boy, is that ever true for the movie we're going to be talking about today, a movie that's 36 years in the waiting for some fans, for other fans. Well, I don't know. Younger fans are going to like this, but they may not have been waiting 36 years. But there's something everybody can like in Top Gun Maverick, the subject of our podcast today. I'm Andy Farnsworth, and joining me today, as always, is my co-host Kellyanne Halverson. Kellyanne, welcome.
I'm excited to get back in the danger zone.
Yeah, already. Mm-hmm. She gets danger zone in the first sentence.
That's
great.
I had to get you to it.
And we're welcome special guest this time, Chad Mortensen of Saints and Sinners True Crime and History of the West podcast. Friend of Kellyanne, and also has seen the movie before everybody else. So, first of all, congratulations on that, Chad. You're making a lot
Thank
of people
you very
jealous,
much.
I'm sure.
Blown away.
And they should be, honestly, yeah. Considering the experience that
Absolutely.
We had.
I got a couple calls requesting. Sorry, already have a plus one.
Thanks for thinking of me. I appreciate it.
So, Chad, tell us a little bit about you since it's your first time on the podcast.
So it is excellent to be here. You know, I've been doing a podcast for myself for the last 2 years based on historic stories from Utah and true crime cases. History is more meaningful sometimes than fictional stories. So I just really enjoy doing it. I give tours of the Salt Lake Cemetery, which a lot of people are like, what's that all about? You know, the graves always stay in the
same
place.
Well, that was the first time I met you, and I'm just easy to think of.
I've got relatives buried at that cemetery. Is there any stories about them?
It's a beautiful place. What are the names?
Fellows.
Fellows. I've seen some fellows up there. I need to learn a little bit more about them.
No, there's probably no crazy stories. But, I mean, we're talking, this is actually my grandparents and my uncle are buried there. So that can't imagine there's any ghost stories about that just yet.
Yeah, there could, I hope so. We can come up with something.
Anyway, but it is a cool place. We've taken church group youth to hike the cemetery and look for different headstones. And it's a
hike.
It's a pretty cool place. I painted fire hydrants right outside it. Even painted a little bit of the fence, too. Wasn't supposed to, but that's a whole different subject.
Well, thanks for contributing.
I
appreciate it.
All right. So it's been 36 years since we've seen Pete Maverick Mitchell in the cockpit of a Navy fighter jet. After a long wait, actually, it was really only supposed to be about 32 or 33 years. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But because of production delays and then the pandemic, we ended up having to wait a couple of more years. I have to say, of all the movies this year that I've been asked about the most, Top Gun Maverick is the one of, have you seen it yet, or when's it coming, or mm-hmm. That's the one that I'm most looking forward to. So it built up almost four decades worth of anticipation. 1986's Top Gun was the top grossing film of that year. It had a soundtrack that has lasted for in popularity. It's one of the top movie soundtracks of all time.
It's iconic.
I was going to say, I'm
Absolutely
sure people
iconic.
Could argue that there are better ones, but there are certainly songs that that anybody who grew up in the 80s or even the early 90s heard over and over again. The question for Top Gun Maverick is, after such a long wait, is there a story left to tell about Pete Mitchell? Is there relevancy? It's been 40 years. You got to figure that Pete Mitchell, the character, has to be close to 60-something. I mean, he's got to be about yeah. Tom Cruise's age. Now, to be fair, for Tom Cruise, he's ageless looking.
He is.
I mean, even now, there was some scenes when he's on the motorbike that you can watch in the trailer where you're not sure if this is a shot from the original Top Gun or if it's
right?
the current one. The one shot where it follows him like coming at the camera and then it pans to the side and you see the jet taking off,
Which
I wasn't 100% sure
it's
if that was a flashback.
So we can talk about
well,
it.
Right, but I mean, that's I wasn't sure if that was a flashback or if that was an actual shot from now. I wasn't sure.
Oh, wow.
So that speaks to whatever Tom Cruise does. And
Some
stay.
Magical elixir, I don't know.
Exactly. I mean, So just so everyone understands, this first segment, we're not going to spoil anything for the movie because there are things that could be spoiled for sure, mm-hmm. Some moments and different things that will happen that we want to preserve for your experience in the theater. But the trailers are out, and if you're a fan of the movie, you've already seen at least one, if not both. It's up to you and your personal experience as to how many times you've viewed the trailers and how recently you've viewed them. So we'll try to stick to that for our first segment, but honestly, if you're listening to this, you already want to see the movie. So mm-hmm. You're just listening to what we thought overall. So that's kind of what we'll stick to in general. So I mean, from the moment that it starts, like, it's an exciting moment. And I don't know about you guys, but when I hear, like, this at the beginning of the movie or at any point during the movie.
The music. Oh.
You hear the bell ding.
I love the dog. Oh, it's so beautiful.
And it's just, I mean, again, it's an iconic score. Harold Faltermeyer's music with the electric guitar. Everybody knows it. I'm not going to spoil. The movie doesn't open with this, but it comes pretty close. Actually, it does open with this, mm-hmm. and then it switches to something else. But I'll let that for the theatrical experience because that wasn't something
I
was expecting.
It's the good side of nostalgia with the music.
Yes,
there, definitely.
But it's something that you associate immediately with Top Gun. And if it didn't, honestly, if it didn't have that musical riff, it would have felt incomplete.
Mm-hmm,
yeah, that connected it.
So we get that, and we jump right in. Plot-wise, all right, so here's the official plot synopsis. After more than 30 years of service as one of the Navy's top aviators, Pete Maverick Mitchell is where he belongs, pushing the envelope as a courageous test pilot and dodging the advancement in rank that would ground him. When he finds himself training a detachment of Top Gun graduates for a specialized mission, the likes of which no living pilot has ever seen, Maverick encounters Lieutenant Bradley Bradshaw, call sign Rooster. If that last name sounds familiar, it's the son of Maverick's late friend and radar intercept officer, Lieutenant Nick Bradshaw, a.k.a. Goose. Facing an uncertain future and confronting the ghosts of the past, Maverick is drawn into a confrontation with his own deepest fears, culminating in a mission that demands the ultimate sacrifice from those who will be chosen to fly it. So that's as far as we'll tell you as far as the story goes. That kind of at least gives you a general idea of what the story is going to be like as you go into Top Gun. But you don't go to Top Gun because of what the plot line is going to be. You go to Top Gun because you want to watch really cool jets do really cool things, and you want to imagine what it might be like to fly in them, which is, I think, what fascinated viewers of the original Top Gun years ago. I know that that's what was cool to me as a kid. Yeah. And, you know, the F-14 Tomcat, it's kind of an ugly, I think it's an ugly plane when its wings are in, but when they're out, I think it looks great. And so that it made me like the F-14 Tomcat a lot, even though I guess it wasn't used as heavily in services, the F-15, the F-16s and stuff like that. So that I even know what any of them are is probably credit to Top Gun, if I'm being honest.
Well,
so.
I wanted those toys. You wanted the, wanted the F-14.
Well, I had the Sky Striker. It was an F-14. It was a G.I. Joe toy. I did have that by the time Top Gun came out. But I didn't know it was an F-14 Tomcat until I saw Top Gun. So
I was talking to John Smith this morning, and he had like the bomber jacket with the patches as a kid. And I'm like, oh my gosh, how cool would that be?
Living the dream.
Yeah,
he wanted to. He wasn't able to. I'm not even a military person, and I thought it was cool. I thought the fighting and everything was cool. And it was filmed for an IMAX, which is awesome.
Yeah.
So you really feel like you're in the seat of different airplanes and everything. And just the advancement of technology, filming technology between 86 and now, beautiful.
Yeah, the stuff they can do. And, you know, Tom Cruise said he wouldn't be involved in the project if it was going to be CGI planes.
Right?
He wanted to do the real thing.
Yep.
And to Tom Cruise's credit, you know, you can say what you want, whether you like Tom Cruise movies or you don't like Tom Cruise movies. You can't go to a Tom Cruise movie, even a bad one, like The Mummy, and not see.
That's what came to mind.
Even in The Mummy, there were some amazing shots. The scene where they're in the plane and it's like turning around them, and they used like a Steadicam. Yeah. And, you know, he pushed the envelope to try to make the most realistic stuff. Not coincidentally, the Mission Impossible 7 trailer dropped the same day we saw Top Gun, and there's some crazy shots in that.
Uh-huh.
And I understand that at one point he was shooting that. If you've seen the trailer, there's a scene where he jumps a motorcycle off a cliff, and it was him. He went off the cliff with the motorcycle. The whole shot is him. But not only did he do that, he did it 9 times.
Wow.
He said things to the director like, I think I can hold onto the bike a little bit longer for the next shot. Like, I think I can do that a little bit better.
It's a wonder he's still with us.
It is, in a way.
I remember
really
Ghost
is.
Protocol, he was on the outside of the building.
On the outside of the building. He hung on the side of a plane in Rogue Nation. He held his breath for like 7 minutes in a real honest-to-goodness take when they were doing the underwater scenes. So the dude really does sacrifice himself for the films.
And he knows his action films. It's beautiful.
He makes it work. And he took a lot of flack, I think. Not that it was necessarily all his fault for how many times this film was delayed. But after you've seen it in the theater, especially in IMAX, you won't regret waiting.
Well, and that's
long.
That's what I was going to say. So that was part of the delay as well. Part of the delay was the insistence of Tom Cruise that this movie be released in theaters. And after you see it, I promise you, no matter what theater, home theater setup you have, unless you're like the onest of the 1% and own an IMAX screen at your house, Nothing that you have at home can top the experience of IMAX in the large auditorium with the sound and everything like that. And to be fair, the Megaplex theaters have the best IMAX screens. Jordan Commons is where we saw it in Sandy. But the one at Valley Fair looks amazing. The one at the District looks amazing. I don't think they have one at the Gateway downtown. But there's plenty of IMAX screens that you can catch. I think they have one in the Centerville one also. Mm-hmm. But at any rate, it's worth seeing it on the biggest screen possible. Do you disagree with me on that?
I thought about Avatar. I mean, it's a different movie, but when I saw Avatar in 2009, I saw it in that same IMAX screen at Jordan Commons, and there was no experience that would match that later on with watching Avatar. Top Gun's going to be
different. I haven't seen Avatar on the big screen. I only saw it once on my tablet.
That one is unbelievable in IMAX.
It's not. They're going to re-release it in IMAX in October, I want to say, the first Avatar.
Ahead of the new sequels.
Yeah.
You got to see that one in the theater. I've never wanted to watch it since then, but I think this Top Gun sequel, I'm going to want to watch it at home.
I felt the same way. When I was done, I was like, I'm willing to go see this again with other people or just see it again for my own enjoyment. And seeing all the movies that I see, I got to be honest, when the kids want to watch one that I thought I may have liked, but it's like, you know what? I'm going to go read a book or something else. I've already seen this one once. I don't want to commit 2 hours to that again. But this is one I would easily commit. And it was 2 hours and I think officially 17 minutes if you stay through all the credits. But it was about 2 hours and 4 or 5 minutes. I didn't think it felt long at all. In fact, I resisted the urge to look at my watch at different points when at different story points, I was tempted to look at my watch to see, is this the end of the movie or is there more? Because that'll
just keep going.
Based on where the story was, I was curious if this was the end of the movie or if there'd be more after that. And so, after Batman had 15 different endings, I guess.
Kept going, didn't it?
Yep.
But Top Gun, I enjoyed all the way through. It gave you all the emotions, the good ones, the bad ones, everything in between. Nostalgia. I liked it. I don't know how else to say it. I thought it was a near perfect summer movie and a near perfect sequel as far as, having a few ties to the past, but kind of telling its own story. And it justified itself, in my opinion, for existing. The story, I thought, justified the existence of the movie.
Yeah, and it could stand alone. I mean, it had several shots, like you said, that looked just like the original, and it did that on purpose to sort of tie our brains into it. But then the movie kind of took off in a little bit of a different direction with these new filming styles and stuff, and it felt like a new movie. It could stand on its own without the first one. It'd still be an interesting movie.
Yeah, kids and teenagers and stuff who might not have seen it, that'd be okay. And what I liked about it was it was a lot less crass than the first movie. And that goes with the maturity of the character as well. And with that maturity, I'm so glad. Everyone keeps asking me, is it weird that it's, 30 years later, 35 years later with Tom's age and everything? And I'm like, no, it's great because it is. It's the characters at that point. It's not trying to fake it or anything like that. But,
well, to be fair, they never say what year it is. They don't.
They also don't say what the enemy is.
Right. That's something we'll get to in the spoiler segment. But they never say. So there's probably a little bit of leeway. And first of all, the movie was pretty much done 2 years ago. So we got to factor that in as well.
Yeah, we were going to do such a cool thing with the movie show, and we had to cancel it because of COVID and the delay.
Yeah.
It was so sad. But this
was one of the first ones. It got pushed to Thanksgiving of that year, then delayed a whole other year. And it was
worth the wait.
It was. Because we got the Super Bowl. We got an ad for it during the Super Bowl of 2020. So after the 2019 season. I mean, it was. We had a trailer and everybody got excited and then had to wait. And maybe that helps, honestly. Maybe the tease of, usually you don't get a trailer because it's not done yet. They haven't shot enough. Mm-hmm. They haven't edited enough. They haven't put it together enough. Well, they had enough of the movie done. They could put out a good trailer, get everybody hyped, and then make us wait 3 more years. And all right, here you go. Anticipation heightens the enjoyment, I guess, is proof
it does.
For Top Gun Maverick, because we sure enjoyed it. I didn't see anybody who left the theater grumbling either.
No one. And it was such a good escape from the world right now and just to be back in the theater. It was really fun for us because it was a press screening with fans as well. So all these people together, all so excited to see the film.
Yes, some of the screenings, there's just about 20 of us in there, and it doesn't get the same audience experience.
It felt like we're officially out of COVID. It felt like a pre-COVID movie.
Now everybody's going to come down with it in 4 days.
No, it was so fun, though, and it's such a good escape, and the action, the music. And it was really good symmetry with and parallels with the first movie as well. So I really enjoyed it.
Well, I gave it 4 out of 4 stars in my review for KSL TV because I honestly, even a day later, I couldn't think of I couldn't think of anything I disliked about it. Honestly,
me too. Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
I liked.
Me either.
I thought the females were not underused. I thought they were justified in their story portions. I thought that they stood on their own. It was a surprisingly diverse cast.
As a female, I agree with you.
Well, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
As a male, I agree with you as well.
But it was a surprisingly diverse cast. That, as I thought about it, I was like, wow, that was a really diverse cast. Mm-hmm. And I've watched shows where it's like, oh, look how diverse the cast is, and it just kind of feels
forced.
Like, yeah, it feels like, well, why would these people be together?
Yeah.
Voluntarily. Mm-hmm. And in this one, I was like, oh, you know, I guess they did have a pretty diverse cast, but it felt organic, and it didn't, to me anyway, it didn't feel like it was being forced down my throat like, yay, diversity. Because yeah. I don't like it when it feels like that. Yeah. I don't mind diversity. I don't like it when it feels forced.
If it adds to the story, I think it's great.
Yeah, or if it does, if you just don't notice it one way or the other. I mean,
well, and you like the new batch too. It's not just these stereotypical characters. You are like, oh no, it's just a new version of our original 1986 class. No, you like them. Like, mm-hmm. It was fantastic.
All right. So that's our spoiler-free version. I mean, would you give it any? I gave it 4 out of 4. Do you have a rating system for yourself?
I'm going to go four stars as well. 4 out of 4. Yeah.
I'm going to say A. I can't even get an A-. I don't know where to say I'd be too critical. Like, it's fantastic. And on top of that, where do you see it? You go see it in the IMAX.
Oh, for sure. For sure. So it's got a hugely successful score on Rotten Tomatoes. I believe it was 96% as of the recording of this podcast. You're going to get a lot of breathless hype. Sometimes it's just the studio trying to hype you up. Sometimes you have to believe the hype. And guess what? With Top Gun Maverick, in my opinion, believe the hype.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Fan Effect, we're talking Top Gun Maverick, and the spoiler-free portion is done, so please don't listen any further if you don't want any of the movie spoiled. I think this is a topic for another day, but sometimes I think we are so worried about spoilers that we forget that up until, like, maybe 2005, mm-hmm. nobody cared if you got spoiled. In fact, that was part of the thing. You go mm-hmm. home and you tell your friend the whole movie story, and they'd be like, dang, I really want to see that.
Really?
And then it's only really, honestly, I think it was the Star Wars movies, maybe, that
like
became
even the newer ones,
the
right?
newer, the prequel trilogy, the ones from, you know, 99 on. Everybody wanted to have the surprise experience, but we didn't care. I remember my friend telling me the whole story of Back to the Future. Like, and when I saw it, it looked nothing on screen like it seemed in my mind from
like
the way he described it. The clock tower for me was Big Ben. I'm trying to imagine all this stuff happening on Big Ben.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to describe, I mean, I was 10 years old and my friend was probably 11, and it was like, so I think sometimes maybe we were a little too much about spoilers, but we certainly didn't want to ruin it for somebody who doesn't want to be mm-hmm. spoiled. But from now on, the stuff we talk about, we'll spoil it for you if you haven't seen it. But this is the most fun. This is the part where you listen to the podcast after you've seen the movie and you compare notes. What did you think about different scenes? What did you think about the story? What did you think about the characters? What were the surprises for you? That stuff we can't touch on in the spoiler free, but we're ready to go right now. So let's start then. With the first spoiler is Danger Zone, played right
Danger
away in the
Zone.
Movie.
Right,
it's almost the same opening to Top Gun.
Same filming angles, everything.
Yeah.
Like,
yep.
Yeah.
Even
jets taken off
across the screen, the font. Yep. Oh.
So you hear the Harold Faltermeyer score, and it switches to Danger Zone once they're on deck and they start taking off, and then it cuts to the actual story,
mm-hmm.
In which if you've seen the trailer, and by now if you're listening to this and you've seen the movie, you realize the trailer does a really good job of not giving you an idea of where the story's going. The trailer makes it seem like Maverick and Rooster hate each other, like Rooster really hates him. And while that's true, the scene where it looks like they're going to come to blows is actually not between Rooster and Maverick, although that's what you thought when you saw the trailer.
Mm-hmm.
In the trailer, you kind of assume that Tom Cruise gets in the spacecraft at the end, like that was going to be maybe the final thing is him flying
that
a spacecraft.
Would be the end. Yes, right.
That's what I thought when I watched the trailer. I was like, oh, is this going to end with him having to fly like a space bomb dropping mission kind of a thing? Nope, that's right at the beginning. He's a test pilot for something. The threshold that they have to meet for the contract is Mach 10. And not 10.1, not 10.2. But if they can't reach Mach 10, and they were only supposed to try for Mach 9 that day, except for there's an admiral played by Ed Harris who wants to shut down the live pilot program in favor of drones.
Mm-hmm.
Makes sense. Perfectly sensible for today's contemporary warfare. Well, so Maverick's like, well, what time's he get here?
I love that because it establishes that, yes, he has matured and grown as a person, but he's still the same dogged, stubborn person.
And he knows
as
what
well.
He's capable
but
of.
And you know he knows, yes.
That was a Tom Cruise moment for me because, you know, for all the grief that Tom Cruise gets from people at times, he really does seem to care about, like, coworkers. And when he makes movies, at least the reports that I've read on set and different things, like, he was furious at people for bringing COVID to the set, not necessarily because that meant he would get sick, but that meant that they had to shut down production. And now all the people that were supposed to be getting paid weren't getting paid. And to him, that was a selfish move. Like, we're all a team, not just me on the screen. He works with the director. He wants the movie to be the best. And at least it seems like he understands that the whole production team is part of the team.
That's so cool.
And
I didn't
so
know that. That's
watching
awesome.
The way Maverick acted, you know, he knew he was coming to the end of his career as far as piloting, but he didn't want the program to get shut down because of all the other people that were involved in the project. So he's like, let's do this now. I'll get court-martialed maybe, but, you know, but, and that's what ends up happening is Admiral Kane's upset because, you know, And he even makes a mention. He's like, you know, you saved all their jobs, but you cost your own. And so that's why I thought that was kind of a cool thing of like Maverick was like, look, this is for the rest of the team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's a professional. If you listen to that conversation during Mission Impossible when Tom Cruise is kind of chewing everybody out for not wearing masks.
Yeah.
You can tell that he cares about the people that are working on the film. So, cool. Yeah, I agree.
That's right. So he flies the aircraft and he gets to 10. Everybody cheers.
Yay.
And then you can just hear his brain going, you know, I'm already here.
Yeah.
I mean, why don't we just check and see what this baby can do? He gets it up to, I think, 10.4, and then the whole craft comes apart and he crashes, which leads to a hilarious scene where he ends up at a diner. Where am I? Like, because he's literally just flown Mach 10. Who knows what state he's even in?
Yeah, he doesn't even know.
Earth. Well, and how beautiful was that opening scene flying that
oh,
aircraft
gorgeous.
With just mm-hmm. stunning, visually
clouds.
Stunning above the clouds.
Now,
you have the airstream
some of
there.
Some of that had to be CGI.
Yes.
It must
That's
have been.
That's the one segment that I would say it definitely was. Because, I mean, the plane in and of itself was pretty much CGI, you know, because mm-hmm. it doesn't really exist. And, you know,
what,
even
you
the
mean they didn't unveil a top-secret military aircraft in a movie for the whole entire world to watch? All right. So Maverick gets chewed out. And is about to, you know, kind of be fired for the last time, except for orders coming in from an Admiral Kazansky that reassigns him to Top Gun base, which we find out that he had taught at before getting fired. Although the movie, as I recall, doesn't really say much about why he got fired, but we can just imagine that, I'm guessing.
Yeah. I'm sure he's been court-martialed and fired and moved many and many a time.
Well, so now he's transferred under the command of Admiral Cyclone Simpson, played by John Hamm, who's the kind of, I guess, the head of Top Gun base. But this time it's because there's a specific mission that requires very short order training, 3 weeks. They've got to blow up a nuclear reactor by some unnamed country, which they're very, very careful never to name. We never see a flag on any of the enemy aircraft. They never say, and actually that works.
Yeah.
It's a worldwide audience now.
Yeah.
You can't make, you can't single out a potential revenue stream and cut it off.
It's not like the 80s where it's the Cold War. Are we still having issues with Russia now? Yes, but it's a different
we weren't 2 years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
They never named Russia as the enemy. You just kind of assumed it in the first one. So it's kind
That's
of the same with this one. It's the enemy, unnamed enemy, but...
So Maverick has got his own little... I thought it was a P-51 Mustang, but it's something else. He has his own personal... It's No. I'm not talking about the motorcycle. Oh. I'm talking about his plane. Oh, it is a P-51 Mustang, and it's Tom Cruise's personal airplane.
It's pretty. That's all I know.
It is.
It's
but it
shiny.
Makes sense that Maverick would have a plane like that, too.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Any rate, Cruise is back at... Maverick is back at Top Gun School. He meets at the bar a former flame of his named Penny, played by Jennifer Connelly.
Which we might recognize the name from the first one.
Well, they never named her in the first one.
No, they did.
I knew they talked about her, but I didn't know they named her.
Because it said the Penny, the
Admiral's daughter.
Admiral's daughter.
Yeah,
there
the Admiral's daughter.
Penny.
But then I guess Meg Ryan has a line. I don't think she said the name, though.
It's during, it's when he's playing piano, when Goose is playing the piano in the first one. Great Balls of Fire. Yeah, Meg Ryan kind of leans over and talks about it.
Mm-hmm. So Jennifer Connelly plays essentially an in-name only character. We never saw any version of her in the original Top Gun. But it's obvious pretty quickly that they have a history together as he shows up at the bar and they're chatting. And he is forced to buy a round for the whole bar because he put his cell phone on the bar. And she rings a bell anytime somebody has to buy a round for everybody. And this is when we meet the new cadets for Top Gun that are coming to train for a mission that they don't know what the mission is. They don't know why they're called in.
Just know they're the best of the best.
They just know they're the best of the best. And let's see. So here are some of the different people that we're going to meet that are the crew. So we've got Glenn Powell, who plays Hangman. A very cocky,
he's
like Iceman from that group. Yeah. He's cocky, but he's really talented, but he's completely arrogant. You've got Greg Tarzan Davis playing Coyote, one of the pilots. You've got Monica Barbaro as Phoenix. You've got, let's see, where did my list go? Jay Ellis as Payback. Danny Ramirez as Fanboy. And then, of course, we've got everybody's favorite. Well, I'm Fanboy, yes. Actually, I did go to the What's Your Call Sign, and I am Starry.
Starry? I haven't looked mine up yet.
I was Wizard.
Wizard,
I
okay.
I could see that. That's very fitting
there,
for you.
There you go.
So, and then we've got the last two. Everybody likes, where did he go here?
Bob.
Lewis Pullman plays Bob.
Bob, yeah, that's his
call sign. Bob. Probably the best one of ever. And then we have Miles Teller, who plays
Rooster.
Call sign Rooster, but his name is actually Lieutenant
Bradley Bradshaw.
Bradley Bradshaw. And if you've seen the original Top Gun, he's the little kid sitting on the piano that is Goose and Meg Ryan's son. Mm-hmm. And they use a couple flashbacks to that, especially in the scene where he's playing Great Balls of Fire on the piano. I assume they did that so people didn't complain. Why would he know that they played Great Balls of Fire? His dad was dead before he was old. But then it shows he was actually sitting on the piano when Goose was playing it in the original movie. So I assume that's why they threw that in, because everybody who's seen the original Top Gun knew that immediately as soon as he started playing it. And it had a visible effect on Maverick, the character, after he gets tossed out of the bar. And then he's playing Great Balls of Fire and he's watching it happen. And we don't know yet the story of why... But you could. There's obviously some unfinished business between those two. And we assume he blames Maverick for his father's death. I mean, that's until we hear different, that's what we would assume going into the movie.
Well, and what a great way to remind the audience of this is the part of the history to focus on. If you haven't seen the movie in a while, this is the story that you need to see. Just the funness and the charm of Goose and everything.
Boy, does Miles Teller look like Anthony
exactly
Edwards.
Like
all Miles Teller had to do was grow a mustache, and he looks exactly like 1980s Anthony Edwards.
Right? It was crazy. I was not expecting that because I'm used to him in other films. And even like the way he moved around and stuff, he really embodied the spirit of Goose there. And I love that it's Rooster and Goose, so it's both
right.
Poultry.
poultry. How about avian in some sort?
Avian.
So I don't know if you noticed.
Instead of just chicken.
When they introduced Jennifer Connelly, when she came on the screen, did you notice the David Bowie song was playing?
I did not.
And Labyrinth came out about a month after Top Gun. And I got to think that was
probably in Labyrinth?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jennifer Connelly was?
She was the main girl in it.
I thought that was Jennifer Beals.
Jennifer Connelly. Yeah, so it came out about a month
I don't know. I've never seen Labyrinth. So.
And I'm like, that's a David Bowie song on purpose.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure of it.
As soon as
sure
she showed up, and I was like, wow, that's
but I like little fun little meta nods like that.
Yeah.
So we find out that Penny has a kid, and it's not Maverick's. They make that pretty clear.
Mm-hmm.
Just so you don't spend the whole movie wondering if it's his daughter that he either is estranged from or doesn't know about. Where's your dad? Oh, he's in Hawaii with his wife. Oh, okay. So it's not Maverick's child, kind of a precocious 13-year-old.
And also the husband is gone with his wife, so there's not a competition there.
Exactly. He's not going to show back up and try to win Penny back. But, you know, we don't know the history until later in the movie that they have together, but they're apparently kind of – I mean, we know that Maverick made a pass at the Admiral's daughter years before, but apparently they had several times where they would come together and then it would flame out. And at one point, Penny's daughter's like, don't hurt her again. That's why I was interested to know, since now we're in spoiler territory, I was interested to see if Maverick was going to die.
Right?
Because once they really started establishing this relationship between him and Penny, I was like, boy, is he going to end up?
Well, and it's not on the table. I mean, look at the last
James
Bond
movie. And she's got to understand, it's not like he just flamed out and decided to go somewhere else. Like, that's always the risk when the pilots go into combat that they're not going to come back. In fact, that's one of the key points of the movie is, as we go along, we find out that this is a mission that, based on the protections of the target that they're trying to hit, it's not a likely survivable mission. It's kind of like we know going in that most, maybe not all, are going to die on the mission just because of the anti-aircraft and the fighters. And the fighters are more superior. That's what Tom, or that's what Maverick makes a point in the front of the giant American flag, a point that he tries to make. That's the only flag, by the way, that we see in the whole movie is the American flag on the boat, the American flag, the big giant one in the hangar, and then on the on the sides of the aircraft.
Gotta keep it a little ambiguous.
Yeah. So against who? China, Russia? Who knows? The Middle East? They got mountains wherever it is there that they flew into. But it was going to possibly be a sacrificial mission.
Well, and I love that, too, because it goes back to what we're talking before about Mav's character and even Tom Cruise as a person caring about the people he works with. Like, his whole goal was to get them in and get them out alive, where some of the commanders and the other people, it wasn't as important to them, it felt like.
Well, and he always emphasized that, and to get them home.
They're like,
if that works out, sure.
That would be cool.
And that's what kind of that was a theme throughout the movie, was sort of the healing that he's been doing for having lost Goose. And it's just a thread that just runs throughout Maverick, where he just doesn't want to lose.
Even Iceman, let it go.
Yeah.
It's time.
Well, and speaking of Iceman, at some point, Maverick rubs people the wrong way, as he usually does. Mm-hmm. His training is... by the way, that's, to me, the funnest sequences are the ones where he's training the pilots.
Yeah.
And they're, okay, we're going to have a dogfight with Maverick. This is similar to what they had with Jester and Viper in the original Top Gun. Only now it's Maverick doing the flying, and he embarrasses them all. They make a bet. Oh, let's do push-ups for whoever gets killed. And everybody gets to take turns doing push-ups while Maverick takes them all out. This was what was good about it. And again, here comes our obligatory Star Wars reference.
Yes.
We'll have one in every episode. This seemed like the director, Joseph Kosinski, and I think one of the producers is Chris McQuarrie, who Tom Cruise works with all the time. I felt like they understood that you couldn't make Top Gun Maverick. If you're going to introduce all these new pilots, mm-hmm. you got to let Maverick be Maverick.
100%.
And they did a good job of balancing. Everyone played a key role in the mission. Nobody could have done it without the others. I mean, just by the fact that it had to take two bombing runs to hit the
the
reactor, mm-hmm. that meant that Tom Cruise couldn't do it by himself.
Yeah, right? He had to rely on
Maverick would if he could.
But none of them could do it. Even Hangman couldn't do it by himself, even though he wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
So it meant that it was going to have to be a team effort. And so you could introduce these new pilots, and I didn't think there was any that were dislikable. Even Hangman was likable in his dislikability, kind of like Iceman was.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I mean, when you get past the fact that we're obviously supposed to be rooting for Rooster and we're obviously supposed to be rooting for Maverick, just like with Iceman, if you can look back at it, laying aside who you know you're supposed to be rooting for, was the stuff that Iceman said wrong? Arrogance wrong? Was the fact that he was a better, because he did win the top in his class, as they jokingly referenced in this one.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, he's just like you top in his class. He's like, well, I mean, I finished second. Just want to manage expectations here, which is funny because I don't think they manage expectations at all. Only in the trailer, because everything you saw was just exceeded expectations. But everybody needed to be a team, but Maverick still played a critical role in all of it, not just as mentor, but he was mentor for the first part. And then, as it turned out, when he, gets barred from the mission and then he flies the course himself and shows you can do it in two minutes and 15 seconds.
Nails it.
Nails it. Then suddenly he becomes part of the mission. And, of course, he stole an aircraft in order to fly that mission to prove it, because he'd already been grounded from the mission, or from the training.
You wouldn't expect anything less from Mav. So.
No, right. I mean, it was like, was Maverick going to steal a plane? Wow, what a shock. So he gets to be part of the mission and play a critical role in the mission. But again, he's not the only one.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was a great job of using the legacy character. And now, of course, the movie's called Top Gun Maverick, so it's not... It's not like Star Wars Episode 8 was Star Wars The Return of Luke Skywalker. If they'd have done that and then treated Luke Skywalker like they did, then I think I'd be a little bit more mad. But
a little bit more than you are.
No, I'm not that mad. I actually liked The Last Jedi.
I did too, to be honest.
But that was the frustrating part of the sequel trilogy, was I just felt like, in some ways, after having watched it and now digested it for a couple of years, there's a part of me that almost would rather they didn't have brought the legacy characters back at all, rather than... not to bring him in and be like, but no, let's make sure you understand. We like these characters now. Here's the legacy ones. Okay, we'll off that one. Okay, we'll off that one. Then unfortunately, we had to off the other one because they unfortunately died in real life. But
yeah,
this was a good job of intertwining the two. Mm-hmm. You know, in some ways, I think it's almost a gold standard. If you're going to bring them back 30 years later,
right?
A good way to mix it up. Now, a lot of that is credit to Cruise for being in shape,
yeah,
for
yes,
looking younger. Mm-hmm. I mean, if he'd have looked, I don't know, like John Voight, I don't know if we would have bought him flying the aircraft like that. But because he still looks young, even though he's 60 years old in real life and maybe his character's in his 60s also, we could still buy that it's possible because it looks like he could survive.
Yeah,
the physical.
Well, and then
leaders.
How stubborn Maverick is, he's not gonna let that flight go. He's gonna keep doing what he wants to do as long as possible. So
right,
really
and
good.
You know there was a Star Trek moment from the Star Trek movies. Well, I don't know if you've seen the Star Trek movies, but when the movies begin, Kirk has been promoted from captain to admiral,
mm-hmm,
and in both the first and the second movie, he ends up reassuming command of the Enterprise. The first time, it's because there's a big alien threat, and they're like, hey, you were in deep space for 5 years. Go and see what it is. Also, you're closest. Mm-hmm. Then in the second one, he's on a training mission when everything goes haywire, and so he's already there in command. Well, by the time number four is done, and he's stolen the Enterprise to go save his friend and all this stuff, they dismiss all the charges because they saved Earth.
Mm-hmm.
Except for they only keep one charge, and that's disobeying a direct order. And they did that so that they could demote him from admiral back to
so
captain.
Keep having that chance.
And they said, like, where, you know, so we reduce you in rank to captain and return you to the place where you probably should have been the whole time,
mm-hmm,
and where you've served so well. And Maverick just never made that mistake of getting promoted to admiral in the first place.
And he did on purpose. You have
right,
that one point when Amelia, the daughter of Penny, is like, still captain.
Yeah, and a couple times during the movie, somebody was like, you should be a senator by now, you know?
Yeah, you should be like a... In fact, I think that was John Hamm's character that said that when he was like having to ground. I'm like, for goodness sake, you should be a senator or something by now. But here you are still a captain. He's like, well, I am where I belong.
He knows what he wanted to do. And he was willing to be a bit flexible in that, though, because when they brought him in to teach, he's like, I'm not a teacher. But he realized the importance of this mission. He's going to do it. But it's Mavericks who's going to do it his own way.
Yep. So they fly the mission. They're successful in very pulse pounding ways. I found myself having to,
I couldn't look
to
away,
mentally unclench my leg muscles because there were times where I was like, oh my gosh, like it's not real.
Yeah,
no
need
real,
to no
real,
need to get.
I was
like,
taking notes and I totally stopped for like 30 minutes.
Yes.
I'm like,
mm-hmm,
you can't take your eyes off the
screen. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So they fly the mission. They're successful, but Maverick gets shot down when he saves himself or when he sacrifices
Rooster.
Himself to save Rooster. And so that was the moment when I wanted to check my watch. I was tempted to be like, wait, is this it?
Like, well, and there's so many parallels in the first movie every step of the way. You're like, is this a parallel they're
well,
handling?
Well, you also think, again, reality.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, when you're a grown-up, you realize how reality creeps into the movies and sometimes influences the plot just because. It's the same thing with the Marvel movies. You know,
mm-hmm,
at some point these actors are going to age out. What are they going to do then?
Mm-hmm.
Do you go with it? Do you recast? You know, so for me it was, I can't imagine they'd ever shoot a Top Gun movie without Tom Cruise's Maverick.
Mm-hmm.
But it took 40 years to get the sequel. And honestly, what really could they do with Maverick after this except have him live with Penny and be... You know, be happy and raise
trilogy.
Your daughter.
This
but that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So there,
yeah.
there because there could be no, there's really not a room for a sequel in which Maverick will play a role. It could make sense narratively that he sacrifices himself to save his partner's son after all these years.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I was tempted to look at my watch and be like, wait, is this the end of the movie?
Yeah.
Or
ooh,
is there more? Is there some way that he could be saved? And of course, it turns out that he could. He survives the crash. The chopper's about to gun him down, and then at that point you knew, ain't no way they're going to gun down Cruise in front of a helicopter.
I kind of thought
he either dies in the crash
or
somebody's about to save him.
Oh, but when that helicopter did turn and like its guns were
facing
right on the camera there, I'm like, ooh, I'm a little, my heart's
I actually
racing.
Thought that was going to be Hangman that hit him.
Oh.
That's what I thought at first. The Hangman was going to just disobey orders and take off to help out because he, at that point... I mean, you had to know Hangman was going to come back into the picture,
mm-hmm, yep,
because he's the best pilot of the group, and he gets stuck back at the aircraft carrier because Maverick picked Rooster as a fellow single fighter. So you know he's going to have to play a role. You don't just have him be all right. that and then just sideline him for the whole fight. So I thought that was going to be Hangman.
He's so eager, he's still sitting in the plane. Like,
well, yeah, I mean, they were supposed to be on standby for immediate stuff. So once Goose saved him, and then they, then it becomes like this. I mean, I loved it, but it was like a weird juxtaposition of a scene where, like, now they've just saved the day blowing up the nuclear reactor. And they're standing there arguing with each other in the woods.
Yeah.
Great dialogue exchange, by the way. What were you thinking?
Tom Cruise coming right up and just shoving him down. What were you thinking? You told me not to think.
Well, I mean, Miles Teller was so good in this movie.
So good.
As Rooster. I've always loved him. The first thing I saw him in was the Footloose remake. Mm-hmm. Which wasn't
he
a
was
good,
in that?
Yeah. It wasn't a good movie.
I don't think I've seen that
but
one.
He was,
you don't need to see it.
He was good. I mean, his charisma on screen is definitely there, and he looks like Anthony Edwards. It's
crazy. And see, I saw him, I think the first time I recall seeing him was Ready Player One.
One of my favorites.
And Whiplash is amazing.
And I haven't seen Whiplash, but obviously he knows how to act because that was a really well-received movie. Yeah. Wasn't he Cyclops in the new version of X-Men? I think he was. Nicholas Holt was Beast,
sure.
And I believe Miles Teller was Cyclops in the last couple X-Men movies.
But he's great. The casting in this
yeah,
movie.
And Miles Teller, boy, is he having a great little set of time right now. He was he's in the Offer, which is just an amazing series on Paramount Plus. If you haven't seen it, he's
that's
such a good series.
That's the one about the
Godfather. Yes, it's so good. I mean, I look forward to that every week, like you won't believe. And he's in this, and just. I mean, he's a grown up now. Like, I don't, he didn't feel that grown up in Ready Player One, but he's a grown up now. And he's a highlight. It was interesting. I was reading up on the production of Top Gun Maverick, and all the actors went, or Cruise, I think, was trying to pick the role of Rooster. So he brought three actors. He picked Bradshaw, but he was so impressed by the guy who played Hangman that he made them add Hangman as a role.
And that's Glenn Powell. I couldn't figure out where I saw him else from, but I really, he's a great performance as well.
And he wouldn't have been good as
a square
as Rooster, I don't think.
I don't think he'd have been the right
Iceman type
role. Oh,
look.
For sure. And maybe that's what Cruise noticed was the chemistry on that. Now, speaking of Iceman, getting to see Val Kilmer on screen again with all of it, and they didn't like hide the health problems. They leaned right into it. I guess there's sort of a plot criticism. It's that, wow, it's amazing that Iceman just happens to die in the three-week training program that they have for the Top Gun.
It's a little convenient. But they had to have the parallel of another friend passing.
And it was the funeral scene's really cool where they take the wings and they hammer them in onto the casket. I think that's a Navy tradition. I think it is.
Yeah, okay. I went to a funeral recently where police officers hammer those in. Their medallion or whatever. But yeah, I needed a Kleenex. Kellyanne handed me a Kleenex during that scene. So there were a couple
Jean
times.
Louisa Kelly plays, it took me the whole movie. I had to wait till the credits because I was just racking my brain trying to figure out who she was. That's who plays Iceman's wife. And she was on Uncle Buck. She was the oldest daughter, Tia. And then she was in Yes, Dear, and she was in Mr. Holland's Opus. Anyway, that's just to save you. I kept thinking Calista Flockhart, but she was not skinny enough to be Calista Flockhart. But it was a TV show about that same area. Well, when it's all said and done, and maybe probably the most spoilery thing that I don't want to ruin for people is that Maverick and Rooster steal an F-14 Tomcat to fight their way out of unnamed country of enemy. And he takes out fast.
This is a taxi road. This isn't this runway.
Well, and I thought of that. As soon as he did that, I was like, oh, that's like taking off on a deck. I mean, that's part of the whole point of naval aviators is they have short runway takeoffs and landings. And he loses his gear and he takes off. But getting to watch Maverick fly and kind of getting to have the fun of Rooster being like, this thing is so old. Like, I don't even flip the switch. Like, there's like 1,000 switches back here.
Like, well, your dad used to take care of it. I don't know.
I didn't have to think about that. So that led to
satisfying. The intensity of that fight and the humor in it as well. Like, just wave at them. Act normal. So good.
Just well done. It fit the characters. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just, if you've listened to this point and you've seen the movie, you know what we're talking about. You probably felt the same thing. If you're listening because you just want to hear the whole spoilery thing, well, hopefully this is getting you excited for the way it works out because I thought that was really good. All right, let me take a break here, and then when we get back for our final segment, I want to talk about some themes that I noticed and get your guys' thoughts on how you felt and if you saw the same thing I did and just. You know, movies aren't just for the action sequences, even though those are the parts we enjoy the most. But the really good ones have an underlying theme that they try to tie the action and the dialogue to. And I'm going to tell you what I thought this one was and see what you guys thought when we get back. All right, final segment for Top Gun Maverick here on Fan Effect. Andy Farnsworth, Kellyanne Halverson, and Chad Mortensen. We've been talking spoilers for the last segment, but I want to talk about a theme that I noticed. It was to the point where I actually had to write this down because I started to notice it recurring. So, and I think it's an appropriate choice based on how many years it's been since we had the original Top Gun. The idea to revisit the characters 40 years later. The biggest stretch for us was going to be, I mean, really, is accepting that Maverick could still fly a fighter jet like that based on his age and everything else.
Yeah, that they would let him.
We want it so we can willingly overlook maybe the illogical nature of it. Would the Navy actually employ a 60-year-old pilot? I don't know. I actually have some cousins in the Navy, but I don't know. They weren't aviators, but that doesn't matter for the purposes of our movie making. We accept it. But it would be impossible to make it and to even though we're accepting a 60-year-old as a pilot, not acknowledging the fact that he's an older pilot and he really is on his way out, and you've got a whole group that have come up that are well-versed on newer aircraft. I mean, when Maverick's thinking he's being initially assigned to fly the mission. And how cool was that when they're like, what's your assessment? And he immediately like lists like 1,000. We need 4. We got to go in here. It's going to take. Now, I'm a little rusty on my F-18. I'm not sure how much time I'd need to get current. And they're like, oh, no, we're not. You're not going to fly it. Well, you're going to teach him how to fly it.
Not a teacher.
And then this goes into this. So for me, it was the line that they used in it. And I wrote this down. Time is your greatest adversary.
Mm.
Yeah.
When he's talking with Iceman, what did Iceman type on the screen? There's still time. Like, I can't teach him. There's still time. I've lost Brewster. There's still time.
Points at it.
Yeah, he didn't even have to say it. And then, of course, when he actually did use the dialogue, get you all choked up, they need Maverick.
Yeah. That
was pretty cool.
Yep. Dang it, Andy.
But then he also said, and then I believe it was Penny. It was hard to write and keep paying attention to the screen. But the other thing he said was, it's time to let go. And he goes, I don't know how.
Yeah, that was beautiful.
And so she was saying, like, it's time to let go of a lot of things. Like, you're going to have to let go. At some point, you're not going to be able to fly the aircraft anymore.
Yeah. Well, Iceman said you're that, and Penny also reinforced it when she's talking
about
Iceman
did say, time to let go?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then Penny reinforced the conversation about learning to trust her daughter.
And him learning to trust Rooster. That's right.
Yeah.
Okay. But yeah, when he's like, I don't know how, that's when Tom Cruise actually tears up, Maverick tears up on screen. Mm-hmm. And I mean, think about this. Tom Cruise has been making this type of movie for this many years,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he's got more more crazy. Jump motorcycle off the cliff. I think I can hold on to it longer as I'm falling off this cliff.
Let's do it again.
That I might die on, but I could do it again. We didn't get the shot. I hung on the side of a plane.
Are you sure?
For Tom Cruise, that was Tom Cruise talking just as much as Maverick talking. I don't know how to let go.
Well, he's become such a better actor than he was. I mean, it's interesting to compare his acting now compared to then, too. There were some scenes that really resonated in this movie because he's become so good at it.
That's true.
Jerry Maguire. He's done Magnolia, A Few Good Men. I mean, all kinds of stuff.
I've never seen that one.
He did pretty well in that.
Vanilla Sky. Those are two
Vanilla
that I've
Sky.
Never seen.
Vanilla Sky. That's a good one.
Well, and it's funny, too, because even through all that, doesn't matter how much of an adversary time is, it's only a matter of time before the women will give in to Tom Cruise's charm. Don't give me that look, Maverick.
That was
Maverick.
A beautiful way that it happened, though.
Don't give me that look, Maverick. But the idea of time being the adversary, I mean, you look at the different things. The time was their adversary. They were running out of time before they could... They'd run out of time to meet the thresholds of the contract for the fighter. They only had 3 weeks of time. That's not enough time to prepare these guys for it. It's time to let go, but I'm not ready to let go of all of the things, you know. Find out that the reason that him and Rooster have an issue is because not because he blames Maverick for his dad's death.
Which you're thinking for a
which
big
is what
portion
you would assume,
movie.
Right.
Yeah.
But it's because he pulled his papers at the academy. Originally, Rooster wants to go to the academy. Turns out his mom didn't want him to go, but she talks to Maverick. he becomes the fall guy for that, mm-hmm. pulls his papers and sets his career back. Now, I'm not in the military, but I do understand that there is career paths and you're often measured, and I don't know if this is just culturally or just how it is, you're measured by where you are in relation to your graduating class. Oh. What rank advancements do you attain as you go along?
So big deal.
My classmate is already a captain and I'm still a lieutenant junior grade, or I'm a lieutenant senior grade, or, you know, eventually you get to the admiral level. So Tom Cruise could be, and that's why they're saying, like, you should be an admiral by now, because Iceman, who was part of his class, was an admiral. Mm-hmm. John Hamm was a three-star admiral. I believe I saw three stars on his mm-hmm. collar, whereas Ed Harris only had a two-star. So these were people where Maverick, following a career path, would have been. But instead, he was still a captain. Mm-hmm. And so that's part of the reason that the people were saying to him, like, you're still a captain. That's kind of an insult to a military person. Like, why are you still at this grade? Usually that only happens if you suck.
Yeah.
Like, if you're just not good. No, really. Because otherwise, there's career advancements. And that's why doing something wrong to the wrong person can ruin your career, because mm-hmm. all they have to do is write on a report that something, that you're not good at something. And then when you're looking at 6,000 people, oh, well, this guy's commanding officer says he's not good at that. And so suddenly your career stalls. And mm-hmm. so he sets Rooster back by several years by having him get his papers pulled from the academy altogether.
Well, and it wasn't just because he didn't want Rooster to resent Carol. He also says that he didn't think
he didn't think he was ready. But I thought it was the more noble one was, you know, he already better that he hate me than his mom who's gone. And, and that was kind of a noble thing.
Well, and that is definitely the noble part of it. But it's also, it brings him to the struggle of today is like, is he ready now?
Right.
Because it's not just.
Well, no parent thinks their kid's ready for stuff. I'm going to be honest. I've got six. I got age 20 down to age 9. Mm-hmm. And at no point have I thought, oh, yeah, no, they're ready
they're
for
totally
this.
Ready.
Now, they may be ready, or they may, you know, do well despite, but no parent generally thinks, oh, yeah, no, they're ready for this.
Who thought we'd get a parenting film out of Maverick 2? Like,
we really did, yeah.
Out of Top Gun 2.
Well, and, you know, I didn't think that, but I mean, I guess it makes sense because you had to figure that at some mm-hmm. point there was going to either be the father-son headbutting.
Yeah.
Over, it was going to be over something, because it's always something.
Always.
In this case, it was, why'd you pull my papers? And then that's the scene where you saw them arguing in the trailer, but it wasn't over, you know, you killed his dad and that kind of thing. Because apparently he was okay with that. Mm-hmm. And that's not what Maverick feels guilty over anymore. Although you could still see that the thought of it haunted him. There was no way he could watch his friend and his friend's son die mm-hmm. on the same missions with him.
Well, and he used that.
And then
that.
How about when the when I was like, first of all, there's no way they'd kill Rooster the same way they killed Goose. So whatever the malfunction was going to be with the seat when it was pulled, the ejector seat, he is not going to hit the canopy on the way up. I'm sorry.
Well, and how great did he use that loss of Goose to teach the new batch, these new batch of flyers, where he said to them when they were failing the missions and the simulations, like, so what are you going to tell their families that this failed?
Yes, that was a great way to kind of recenter their attention. Like, hey, you know, you were in such a rush to complete the mission yourself. Well, what are you going to tell the families of the people that are dead? Oh, yeah, he didn't make it because he flew too slow.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it just kind of reset everything of the reality of it, of how much Goose's death still bothered Maverick, and how much that helped him mature as an individual as well. Like, ooh, so good.
And
so
how much
good.
Rooster still thought about his dad. That scene where he's in the cockpit, he says, talk to me, Dad.
Talk to me, Dad. And
instead of talk to me, Goose.
Well, Cruz said, or Maverick said, talk to me, Goose, multiple times.
He did. Yeah.
Oh, I did write that down.
Although, I guess here's another possible thing.
Possible critique?
Well, just, like, why would he say, talk to me, Dad? I mean, that's like Maverick's thing. Unless Maverick said it around his kid a lot like that.
Why would the wording
be
the same?
It's a little too specific. But I mean, it worked. Emotionally, it works just fine. Yeah. But it was something where you're just, when you think about it, you're like, where did
he had seen the original Top Gun. And, you know,
yeah, he'd seen the original Top Gun, so he knew
they
that.
Had to. They
that's
were
a great observation.
The exact same shots.
Caught up in the vortex.
So Miranda, so I thought that the theme about time and, you know, Tom Cruise, or I kept calling it Tom Cruise, but it's Maverick, finally realizes it's time to, you know, maybe make a commitment instead of just being on and off again with Penny. The daughter obviously reinforced that, like, hey, if you're going to get, and how about the love scene? They set it up exactly like the original one.
It looked very 80s.
I was waiting for Take My Breath Away's music to start for a second, even though Lady Gaga has the theme for this movie, and it was that music that was playing. But he lays her down the exact same way. Like, I was like, are we going to get the top tongue part like we did in the original
movie?
I'm glad
we did not.
But it,
did
suddenly
not.
It cuts to them in the bedroom, and it cuts to them, like, and it shows the course over the night, like, it fades. They just sit and
they
talk the entire night.
It's so great.
I thought that was a hilarious, like, sort of a side thing. And then he still has to go out the window anyway when Penny gets
the
not Penny,
right
the daughter there. Gets home. What's her name?
Amelia
gets, Amelia Earhart, makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
When Amelia gets home unexpectedly, but just the idea of them talking, like it's more of a mature reaction to things. Mm-hmm. Like they're catching up. They have
a
relationship.
Solve this in character.
That's, and though I don't know if anybody's going to complain that Kelly McGillis's character, Charlie, isn't back at all.
Yeah.
But I mean,
and
narratively,
I'm glad they never mentioned her. You don't need to explain that.
Well, but that was the thing. Like, they never, I don't know if they implied that he was going to have a long-term relationship with Charlie at the end of Top Gun. But either way, I always thought that their love story was just goofy. Like,
I thought so too.
It was a little
her
cheesy.
Line in the original Top Gun is like, because I was afraid it would be, I would give
I
away that I've fallen for you.
For you.
Yeah, this one's definitely less cheesy, less crass.
I was okay with Kelly McGillis not to bag on Kelly McGillis, but I was okay with her not being in the movie.
Yeah, and Jennifer Connelly, okay. Who
and
was
they could establish narratively that through Penny actually that Maverick was not really the committing type.
Mm-hmm.
By the fact that. Obviously, they had a connection because they'd keep getting together, but then they'd keep falling apart. So
Amelia's aware of that. Don't break her heart again.
But the scene setting up the love scene, that was one of the many similar beats to the original movie that they did that really, if you've seen the original a bunch of times, you recognize them quickly. The opening sequence with the Harold Faltermeyer music followed by Danger Zone. The scene where Cruise is on that second deck. Looking out at the ocean,
mm-hmm.
which he did a couple times in the first one. And this, I mean, at first it was the ghost of Maverick's father. Then it was the ghost of Goose in the mm-hmm. original one. And in this one, he's thinking about the potential ghosting of the son, I guess. But, and I don't know. I thought they did a good job of sort of portraying the tension. Like, we get one shot at this and not even just like our own lives, but we get one shot period to even... to take this thing out. Or so, you know, in a worst case scenario, in a worst best case scenario, we take out the thing and we die, but we took out the thing.
Mm-hmm.
In a worst case scenario, we don't take out the thing and we die. And it didn't matter.
Radiation.
Didn't it feel like A New Hope when they were explaining how they were going to go about?
Yes. Like, actually, one of the critics walked out and said to the studio rep, like, just like Beggar's Canyon back home.
But it worked. It worked because you knew exactly what they had to do. It wasn't vague.
Yeah.
You knew what was at stake, and I thought they did a
good
job.
How dangerous was the skill that was needed for it. What I think is interesting, so you took out of it that time was one of the main themes of it. And me, I'm at a different phase of my life. Going into it, what I took out of it was more of that trust element of learning not just to trust yourself, your skills, but allowing yourself to trust others' skills and possibilities, opportunities. So I love that we both walked out with a significant message from the film, even if it wasn't the same message there. Like, and Chad, I don't know if you pulled something different. You've
I walked
had different
out with
experiences
healing, with healing from loss.
Yeah.
You know, I lost my dad last month. And just in general, we all lose people and they both had to go through that. Rooster and Maverick were both healing from different losses they'd had.
See, and that's what a good movie does and a good story does. It doesn't just hammer one point and one point alone, but it allows you to experience it not only from the point of the characters, but to experience in your own framework to come out with your own realizations and everything like that. And I think because it wasn't just a fun escape adventure summer blockbuster film, but there also was these meaningful moments in it. I really hope Maverick does good in the theaters, and I think it will.
I really hope it does.
Oh, no, there's no question. This might be – I mean, I'm trying to think of what's coming. Some of the Marvel movies could beat it, but outside of like a superhero movie, I don't think there's any doubt this is going to be the top grossing movie of the year.
Definitely, yeah.
I don't even think Avatar is going to beat this. I don't.
I don't know.
There's
many
not
asking
anticipation
about
Avatar like mm-hmm. there is for this. I mean, mm-hmm. this is like a generation. Interestingly, in the notes, this is the longest time between an original and a sequel mm-hmm. of 36 years. So it is a lot of anticipation built up. And so I do think it's going to do really well with yours. All right. So last thing, the last portion, what were some of the funnest things of it? I wrote down a couple that I really liked that kind of caught my eye. One of them was that no one can resist Tom Cruise for very long, certainly not over 2 hours. No matter what, Penny was going to fall to his charms. At least they just stayed up and talked, right? So that it wasn't just like exploitative or something like that. But that was funny. we got a Tom Cruise running scene. We can't have a movie without it. And he's running in full pilot gear through the snow. I mean, there's no way he could have a not sucking wind conversation with Goose after running through the snow in that pilot gear. But whatever. It was still hilarious. I love the line in the – he used a line from his dad and pardon the curse, do some of that pilot shit. That's what Goose said to Maverick in the first one. And that's what Rooster says to Maverick when they're trying to escape. And then how about this for an ending? They literally fly off into the sunset.
And it's the same almost shots from the first one. This time Penny is with him.
And this time he flies into the – didn't he ride off into the sunset in the first one? He didn't fly off, did he?
I
don't remember the ending.
Let us not forget
the volleyball scene.
But it was double football, which teaches you – because at first I thought, wait, are
offense,
they using
defense?
Two? And then I thought, wait, is this like – was that like a mirror image or what's happening here? And it turns out that it was, what did he call it? I don't remember what they officially called it.
Sudden death or something like that.
But where you have to play offense and defense at the same time. And you're like, actually, that's kind of like a logical thing for these fighters. They have to defend themselves and accomplish their offensive mission. And it was a great nod to playing with the boys and having volleyball scenes there.
It's nice to see a female in the mix too.
Right.
There were two in there. Omaha.
Yeah,
also.
There we go. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Phoenix and Omaha. Mm-hmm. And so it was, but it was fun. And he's just sitting on the beach in a chair when the Admiral rolls up. What are you doing? You're supposed to be training him. And he's like, I am training him. You said make him a team. This will make him a team.
Dog fight football.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that makes sense. Okay.
That does.
All right.
I think the funniest part, things that I loved, I just loved Bob. Like, I know it's
having
so
a guy
stupid.
Named Bob, that is funny.
And like at the very beginning when he's like, whoa, how long have you been here? He's like, the whole time. He's like, he's stealth. He's Bob.
He's like actually, no, I'm a radar guy. They're like, dude, you don't even get the joke.
He's just this quiet guy that, yes, you're going to help us save the day. Thank you, Bob. And looks a little nerdy too. So as a nerd myself, I'm happy with that.
Yes, we got visual representation instead of just, oh yeah, they just say they're a nerd.
There's still any curvy women like me, but someday, maybe, we'll have some curvy women.
That's true. Although, to be fair, we're talking fighter jets, too. There's a lot of regular type guys that wouldn't have fit in those jets either.
Penny could have been curvy, just saying.
That's true.
Though.
All right. Okay, so we've had the fun moments. Now, what do you think? Final thoughts, Chad? What do you got?
So, to me, it's what stands out. It's on a short list for one of the best sequels I've ever seen. Like, I would put Godfather Part Two, Return of the King
Okay.
And then somebody else mentioned Empire Strikes Back.
Okay.
Last Crusade, maybe.
Those are all amazing sequels. No, I immediately said this is one of the. I texted my brother immediately and said that's one of the best summer movies and sequels that I can remember seeing in a long time.
Right. Yeah.
Would I put it in the top five? I don't know. I guess I'd have to come up with my top five, but it would certainly
Another
be in the
topic
running.
We should
that
do.
Is recency
I'll
bias.
Add it to the list.
That is recency bias. But,
true.
But it was that good, and when I left it, I couldn't think of anything wrong with it. I think that's a great point.
Mm-hmm. I think the same thing. It was a wonderful sequel. It was fun. It was action-packed. It was a blast. It was emotional. It was heartfelt.
Better than Ghostbusters?
I don't know. Say, I love how Ghostbusters had the nostalgia and everything, and it was a younger generation's rise. This one's different because it's still the same characters. I do think it was better.
I agree with you. I liked Ghostbusters, but this is by far better. This is by far better.
Yes, and I was able to balance the nostalgia a bit more, where it was more of a reference and not a, hey, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, we're doing this same thing again.
Hey, it's Top Gun again.
It's Top Gun again.
It was Top Gun again,
but
and that's okay.
It was a more mature Top Gun. It was a more grown up and everything there. So I think it is one of the best sequels I've seen in a very, very long time. And I know people have been very jaded over sequels lately. So don't let that stop you. Go see it. It's beautiful.
I think it's going to get great word of mouth, too. So it's going to do gangbusters the first weekend just because everybody's waited so long to see it. I know this is one where the companies have been renting out theaters so they can let their employees go watch it together. Mm-hmm. And that's what I kind of like that it, again, we mentioned it earlier, but that because it felt less 80s as far as, you know, the stuff, the content. There was an F word in it I did hear. There was a little bit of cussing.
I didn't even notice that.
There was one. It was during a flying scene.
Well, that would make sense.
But they could have gone a lot more crass. I mean, I've heard that there's a reason that they call it sailor talk when they use it to describe, you know, foul language. But but they were restrained in everything. And
when it's PG-13.
I mean, it's PG-13 for peril and for...
strong language, sequence of intense action.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's stuff that, you know, I mean, crud, I'm a 46-year-old guy and I was tensing up my leg muscles in the intense action. So, yeah, it's intense and... But totally worth it. Obviously, you know, if you've listened now for this hour, then you know how much we loved Top Gun Maverick.
Hour. Always go a little over.
All right. Well, that'll do it for this episode of Fan Effect Podcast. We've talked about Top Gun Maverick. We all loved it. We agree it's one of the greatest sequels that we can think of in recent memory, if maybe of all time. We think it'll bear out at the box office, and so that'll be fun to see how that all plays out. So we thank you for joining us on this episode of Fan Effect. Our thanks again to Kellyanne Halverson. Always a pleasure to have you, Kellyanne.
Wizard.
And for Chad Mortensen. Chad, tell us about where we can listen to your podcast.
Saints and Sinners, True Crime in the History of the West on iTunes, Spotify, Amazon Music.
Excellent. And we'll catch you on our next episode of Fan Effect.